Welcome to the East County Magazine live radio show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio representing the public interest, not special interest. Broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso on KNSJ 89.1 FM, your host, Miriam Raftery.
A last-minute press conference was called by city leaders just hours before the first woman stepped forward publicly with sexual harassment complaints against San Diego Mayor Bob Filner.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's local government report. A lawsuit has now been filed against San Diego Mayor Bob Filner by a woman staff member who came forward with attorney Gloria Allred to provide details of her allegations in a press conference yesterday. Two city council members also held a press conference to renew calls for the mayor to resign. However, Mayor Filner says he does not believe that claims are valid, adding that he intends to defend himself vigorously and is confident that justice will prevail. Mike Hancock has details of yesterday's press conferences.
Both Council President Todd Gloria and Councilman Kevin Faulkner renewed their calls for the mayor to resign. Gloria reassured the crowd that city business continues to move forward while what he called a shroud of shame hangs over the mayor's office.
We cannot efficiently and effectively run America's finest city with this mayor in office. Any progress made in the coming weeks and months will be done not because of him, but in spite of him. I repeat my request and echo that echoed by a supermajority of the City Council, and ask Mayor Filner to end this civic nightmare by resigning and allow us all to move on.
Faulkner, who leads the panel's Republican faction, said what's in the best interest of the mayor is to put the people of San Diego first and step down. An hour later and just blocks away, the first woman to step forward publicly with sexual harassment complaints about Filner announced she's filed a lawsuit against him in the city of San Diego. The complaint was filed in San Diego Superior Court on behalf of Irene McCormick Jackson, who until recently was the mayor's director of communications. McCormick Jackson still holds the position but has transferred out of the mayor's office. She's being represented by Los Angeles-based attorney Gloria Allred, who's known for her handling high-profile women's rights cases. Allred said McCormick would have turned and ran the other way if she knew what she was getting into before she took the job in January.
Irene soon learned that what she was really getting into when she accepted the position as communications director was that in order to do her job, that she would have to endure the Filner headlock while he made degrading and humiliating sexual comments to her. She also learned that her job required her to suffer Mayor Filner telling her that she should work without her panties on, that he wanted to see her naked, that he could not wait to consummate their relationship, and that he wanted to marry her.
According to McCormick Jackson, her relationship with the mayor was purely professional.
We did not have a relationship other than work. That is all I wanted, and I never gave him any reason to think otherwise. Nonetheless, he thought that it was acceptable behavior to regularly make sexual comments that were crude and disgusting.
The sexual harassment allegations were first aired publicly 10 days ago by former Councilwoman Donna Frye and lawyers Corey Briggs and Marco Gonzalez. The mayor initially apologized and admitted that he had a problem. More recently, Filner has demanded an investigation and his due process rights. Reporting for East County Magazine, I'm Mike Hancock.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. Today, my guest is Estela De Los Rios, Executive Director of CSA San Diego, which is a nonprofit in East County addressing civil and human rights for the last 45 years. She's also an advocate for immigrant rights on a national level. Welcome to our show today, Estela.
Thank you very much again, Miriam, and it's a pleasure always to be here with you.
The Supreme Court recently ruled to essentially void a key portion of the Voting Rights Act, which had required certain southern states and other places with a pattern of discrimination against minority voters to receive congressional approval before they could change their voting laws. But last month, the court threw out that requirement, Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act, that was passed way back in 1965. The court said that Congress needs to go back and review those regions and see if discrimination is still occurring. Estela, what are some of the ways that this ruling might impact minority voters?
The first thing that comes to my mind is racial gerrymandering, and I say this due to the redistricting efforts that were here locally addressed in the past 2 years. And also, I'm concerned that how many other states will also encourage the same kind of laws. And that is very, very sad that the Constitution hasn't been upheld. And as far as the 1965 Voting Rights Act, if you recall, many of us really worked hard to have this passed. And just recently, last year in Alabama, I had the pleasure of going to Alabama to advocate for the voting rights, because the voting rights, surprisingly, these 9 states are still in the Deep South and still with racial attitudes that will impact communities of color, communities that are underrepresented. And this is very frightful to think that states are going to give their own criteria on how people should vote.
So what are some examples of some of the laws some of these states have tried to pass that now they might be able to do?
Well, some of the states I know were requiring you to have an ID. And for example, some people don't have an ID for issues. Maybe an elderly person doesn't have transportation mm-hmm. to go get an ID. That's one example. A student doesn't have an ID because they're not driving for some certain reason. They're living on the dorm. I'm just giving out examples, but not every community can have an ID, and I don't think that should be a barrier to voting. Voting is our right.
Some of them have had poll taxes and even more draconian measures, correct?
Right. And also charging to vote. I mean, what is the cost? What is that going to look like? What is that going to mean? And I think these are just efforts, because efforts in as far as strategically keeping the vote from the voices that need to be heard and the voices that are reflected in the communities. And ironically, some of these states are anti-immigrant states. And I believe that, again, is a strategic move, because they know that the Latino vote has been very strong and very effective in this nation.
The Voting Rights Act very specifically protects particular classes of minorities, such as African Americans and Latinos. Also some that may not have so much discrimination nowadays, such as the Japanese and the Filipinos dating back to World War II, and yet no protections have been added for more recent immigrants, war refugees, for example, coming here from Iraq, Afghanistan, places like that. Do you think that some changes to the Voting Rights Act, if they're going to have to revisit it in Congress to make these changes that the Supreme Court talked about, is it time to have a broader revisit and take a look at whether new classes should perhaps be added for protection?
That's a good question. As I mentioned before, this situation with the change in the Voting Rights Act may affect, here locally, we have a lot of Arabic communities, particularly in East County, mm-hmm. where it's a second in the nation of influx of refugees / immigrants.
40,000 Chaldeans out here.
Exactly. Chaldeans and Kurdish and Burmese. And it just shows that our demographics, our census is changing. We need to represent as a voter, as a voice of the community, exactly what our communities are representing and what they look like.
Are minorities still the minority in East County?
No. Interestingly enough, I've been here 32 years, and I have seen the changes. I live in the Chaldean community. I am a person of color as well, however you want to call us, communities of color, underserved communities. But I've seen the demographics change. There's Latinos, there's African Americans, and now there's Arabics, and
Asians.
I mentioned before, mm-hmm. Burmese. Asians, I've seen more of a change in National City and Kearney Mesa, but API is the second largest population, growing population in San Diego region.
For local voters, it should be noted that California does have its own Voting Rights Act, which will continue to offer protections to voters, even though the federal government has thrown out key protections for people living in other places. Is there anything in the Federal Voting Rights Act that will impact, or this Supreme Court decision on the Federal Voting Rights Act, that would impact protections we currently have under the California Voting Rights Act?
I believe that one of the counties, or maybe two of the counties, are here in California. I'm not aware of which those are, but I do know that there's conversations as we speak on some of the counties here in California being affected. Here locally, fortunately, we haven't heard anything, but I know that as a community, we will come out and speak out on our voting rights, because we're not a minority anymore. The majority is becoming a minority, and the minority is becoming a majority.
And to be clear, when we're talking about rights for minority voters, you must be a citizen to vote. An undocumented immigrant cannot legally cast a vote in this country, correct?
And you're very correct in that, Miriam.
Just because you don't have an ID, in other words, doesn't...
Right. And that's a good point, because at CSA, we are doing civic engagement. And what does that civic engagement look like? Exactly what you just said. There's undocumented that can't vote, but 9 times out of 10, someone in your family can vote, or your neighbor or your family member in another household will vote. And if you can't vote, just participate. But more and foremost, become a citizen. And a lot of these communities aren't aware that they can become a citizen. And after you become a citizen, then you become a voter. And we're emphasizing that because that is the way, the American way, to have a voice in this country.
Thank you very much for joining us today, Estella.
Thank you very much. The pleasure is mine.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting today for the Sounds of History segment. My guest today is Brian Harrington. Brian is the author of Campo, the Forgotten Gunfight, and he is also a member of the Hole in the Wall Gang and the Gaskell Brothers Gunfighters, two Wild West reenactment troops right here in East County. And they are going to be providing live entertainment at our Wild West Fest to benefit East County Magazine's wildfire reporting, coming up on August 10th from 4 to 7 at the historic Descanso Town Hall in Descanso. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
Tell us a little bit about how you got interested in Western history.
When I grew up, the Westerns were the biggest thing there was on TV, and I think I was infatuated with the Western heroes. I didn't grow up in California. I grew up on the East Coast. So watching my heroes every Saturday ride by on the silver screen, it's kind of attracted me to it. And all of my life, I've been destined to live the cowboy life, and I'm trying to live it as close as one can today.
When did you get involved in the two Western reenactment groups?
A lot of people probably haven't heard of the Campo gunfight. The Campo gunfight took place December the 4th, 1875, in the little border town of Campo, out along our San Diego-Mexican border. It was a historically significant piece of history in the fact that the Mexican banditos who attacked the town of Campo weren't the typical Mexicans coming across the border from Mexico. These were Californios bandidos that came down from Central and Northern California, whose families had deep roots in California long before the Americans got here.
They were wanted, right, for killing stagecoach drivers.
Originally started out with names like Joaquin Murrieta, who was actually claimed to be a revolutionary. He wanted to take back California from the gringo gold miner invaders who were invaded their country. And for good reason, the American miners didn't treat the citizens of California very well in them days. And they were pushed out because of the large numbers of miners greatly outnumbered the indigenous population and the Mexican population of California today.
So when the heat was on these guys, there was a bounty on their heads, they fled south of the border, and they came up with a plan to finance their way to go down and rob the gold trains in Mexico City, I understand.
Yeah.
What was that plan?
There was. The posses were chasing them all over California, Central and Northern California, and they realized that they were going to be caught eventually. So they made their way into Tecate to get the posses off of their trail. And while down there, they decided that they would rob the town of Campo, which is just on the American side of the border. Their plan was basically to ride into town, take over the town, kill anyone who got in their way, load up everything of value that they could possibly want in wagons, and haul it back across the border.
Wow, so it was a very bold, daring plan, but one thing went wrong. They were down there talking about this in the cantina south of the border in Tecate, and then what happened?
That's right. While they were making their plans in the Tecate Cantina, they were overheard by a Mexican fellow who knew the Gaskill brothers, who owned the town of Campo, the brothers Lumen and his brother Silas Gaskill.
And these guys were sharpshooters, correct?
Yes, they were. They were both extremely good marksmen. In fact, Silas Gaskill, during the gold rush, He came west at the age of 21 in 1850, and he found it very difficult to get rich panning for gold in the cold streams, and very few of the miners did get rich panning. But one day, a rancher came in who had a grizzly bear killing his cattle. His cattle were very expensive. Beef was very, very high priced during the gold rush era. So he offered $50 for anyone who could shoot that grizzly bear and get rid of it. And Silas took him up on it. And 2 days later, he came back with a dead grizzly bear. And he got his $50 reward for it. And the miners said, "Silas, what are you going to do with that bear?" Silas said, "I don't know." And they said, "Well, we'll buy it off of you for $50. We'll eat it. That's a lot cheaper than eating beef." So Silas got the idea that hunting for the mining camps would be much more lucrative than panning in the cold streams. And he was right, as in by his own estimation in the interviews conducted with him up until his death in 1914, Silas had stated by his own reckoning he had shot 302 bears in Northern
wow.
California.
So these banditos were up against a pretty fearsome force when they
came up here.
They
had no idea. These were not the normal pushover storekeepers they were used to robbing up in central Northern California. Mm-hmm. And they committed a lot of daring daylight robberies of entire towns up there.
So when the Gaskell brothers found out what was planned, what did they do? I understand they first tried to contact the San Diego sheriff for help.
Yes, San Diego had a telegraph office in Campo. It was the Army Military Telegraph from Fort Yuma to San Diego. So word was able to travel very quickly on the telegraph lines. And they telegraphed for the sheriff when they got word that the banditos were formulating plans down in Tecate to come across the border and rob Campo. But the sheriff had no authority on the other side of the line. It being still more or less rumors, he felt that he didn't have enough to go on to send a posse out to Campo.
So Campo was on its own.
Campo was on its own.
So yes. What happened?
8 days had gone by since the Gaskills had actually learned about the banditos being down in Tecate. And for 2 days, they had all the area ranchers ride into town, and they protected the town. They hid up in the rock. And if the banditos had rode into Campo during them 2 days, they wouldn't have stood a chance. But winter was coming on, and the ranchers, they had ranches to take care of, and they had to get ready and feed put away for winter and cattle rounded up. And so they couldn't stay in Campo and guard the town forever. So the Gaskills, knowing this, said, "Well, you know, we'll take care of ourselves. They're not here yet." Then they got word that Chavez, the bandit's leader, was killed down near Yuma, Arizona, and then they totally put it to rest. They said, "Well, with Chavez dead, these banditos probably aren't bold enough to come to Campo now."
Whoops, big mistake.
But it was a big mistake. The bandito second-in-command, Cruz Lopez, took over the gang. And 8 days later, on December the 4th, they rode into Campo at 10:30 in the morning.
And what happened when they showed up at the store?
The plan was to send 3 men into the store and robbed the storekeeper, which was Lumen Gaskill, the youngest brother of the Gaskills. The other 3 banditos, there were 6 in all, were going to go to the blacksmith shop and shoot the blacksmith and get him out of the way. Well, they attempted to shoot the blacksmith, and they only wounded Silas in the arm. Silas got a double-barrel shotgun and killed one of the banditos outright and severely wounded another one. Then the bandits in the store attacked the storekeeper, and they severely wounded Lumen Gaskill with a shot point blank. Bullet went through his lung, came out his back. The bandits thought he was dead, left him on the floor for dead, robbed the store and went outside. That's when a Frenchman rode into town who worked on a sheep ranch nearby, and he realized the town was under attack, so he took out his pistol and started shooting at the bandits. And he wounded the bandit leader in the neck severely. In fact, he died of his wounds. But the other bandits riddled the Frenchman, and he died of his wounds. But Lumen Gaskill, the storekeeper, who was left for dead on the floor, he came to during the middle of the fracas,
wow.
Got a double-barreled shotgun, come out, and wounded 2 of the bandits very severely. In the Campo gunfight, 5 out of the 6 bandits that rode into Campo died, and the sheep herder who came into town, 2-6.
Was very historic. The Campo gunfight actually lasted longer and resulted in more people dying than the famous shootout at the OK Corral.
Yes, that's true. The OK Corral on its own was a very famous and historical Western gunfight, and it had different factions that in play that were fighting with each other. Mm-hmm. But the Campo gunfight was really very, very significant in the history of California, as far as these Californios bandidos have been raiding and killing Californians for years, mm-hmm. since 1849. But that day, December the 4th, 1875, in Campo, was the last time that they ever attacked any of the communities in California, and it put an end to the reign of the bold and boisterous outlaws, highwaymen, and bandidos who rode the trails of California through the mountains and canyons, deserts and valleys of the great state of California.
That is an amazing story. And actually, it didn't end there. I understand some of these guys got away, and some of them were rounded up and put in a makeshift jail.
Actually, there was only one bandido outright killed in the streets of Campo, but two others were very severely wounded, and they were found hiding in some bushes and rocks on the outside of town, and they were taken into custody. But the next day, they were found hanging at the famous Campo hanging tree, dead, using the very same rope that the bandit leader, Cruz Lopez, had asked to see when he stepped into the store.
Fascinating. Now, you have written the book. Tell us a little bit about what it was like researching that. Did you track down and interview people who remembered this or were descendants of this, knew some of the characters involved?
The research took years, and that's not because I just sat down and did nothing but research. That's because I would pick out a part of the story, track it down, track down people, find out as much as I could. Then I would set that aside, analyze it for a while, and then come to another part of the story. So, and it took me to places like Lone Pine, Independence, Yuma, San Diego Historical Society had lots of good stuff, of course, on the Campo gunfight. The Mountain Empire Historical Society in Campo.
Where can people find your book online?
My book is available on Amazon and on Kindle.
Campo the Forgotten Gunfight?
Campo the Forgotten Gunfight by Brian Harrington. It can be bought in Campo at the Stone Store Museum.
You've done more than just write about this. At some point, you became involved yourself as a Western reenactor. There's two different groups, the Gaskell Brothers Gunfighters, mm-hmm. and then the other group you're involved in is the Hole in the Wall Gang. Can you tell us a little bit about that group and how they got started?
Well, this all really started with joining the reenactment group, the Gaskell Brothers Gunfighters out in Campo. In fact, I was looking for a sort of a group to get involved with. It was in the Western historical thing. And I'd heard about the Campo gunfighting. And somebody said, well, call this number and go out and see. Well, I went out, and immediately I got cast as a bandido in the next reenactment.
So it was a fan of
that
Western history.
That was 22 years ago.
This must be really sort of living out the fantasy, isn't it?
Yes, so and it's been a ball. I love history. I love researching history as much as I like writing about it. And one thing just led to another. First, I'm in the Gaskell Gunfighters, and I instantly realized this story was big. And it had never been a novel written about it or a movie done on it. I called it Campo the Forgotten Gunfight because kind of Western historians kind of overlooked this one, which was good for me because I was the one to be able to bring it out and present it in the way I did. And one thing left to another. And over the years doing reenactments and with the Gaskell Gunfighters, finally I got the opportunity to become skit director for the Hole in the Wall Gang out at Lakeside. The Hole in the Wall Gang is a nonprofit organization, and we do stuff that benefits equestrian type activities, and that's usually everything we do is around that. You will see us riding most of the San Diego County parades, and we have been for years. The Hole in the Wall Gang's been around since the late 1940s. In fact, we were presented with an award last year from the Mother Goose Parade Association as being the longest riding equestrian group in their history. In fact, they don't even know how long we've been riding at the Mother Goose Parade, and we don't know how long we've been riding. That's how long it's been going on.
Wow. And they do humorous skits about the Old West. Very
yes.
entertaining.
Yes.
And you'll be able to see both of these groups doing some skits for us out at the Wild West Fest in Descanso on August 10th from 4 to 7 p.m. Descanso Junction is rolling out barbecue tri-tips, so we're going to have some great food and great entertainment for everyone. All to benefit East County Magazine's wildfire reporting and our Viejas wildfire and emergency alerts.
We're looking very forward to your event. And yes, it's going to be some Wild West entertainment and comedy, and it's appropriate for all ages, and we'd love to see you there.
The tickets are $15 if you buy them in advance before the end of July. You can get them on our website at www.eastcountymagazine.org, or if you show up at the door, it's $20 at the door. And Brian, thank you very much for coming out today and sharing that colorful bit of Wild West history. You can also come out and see the entire Campo gunfight recreated on August 24th.
Yes, we will be doing the reenactment of the Campo gunfight at the Golden Acorn out near Boulevard. It's a free show. There's also going to be a barbecue cook-off there, so it's going to be a lot of fun. Free show, got grandstands, good seating, and it's going to be good time.
Brian Harrington, author of The Great Campo Gunfight, is now going to recite a poem for us about this colorful, forgotten chapter out of East County's history.
Yes, this is a poem about the Campo Gunfight that took place December the 4th, 1875, out in Campo, and this is pretty much exactly the way it happened. It was on a clear Saturday. It was under December skies when five riders rode out to Campo with the sunshine in their eyes. These men were desperados, men who lived by the gun. They'd kill you for your money. They'd kill you for their fun. Back then, Campo was only a small store, hotel, and telegraph. Why, to rob this town would be so easy? All the bandits, did they laugh? And under their sombreros, murder was on each and every mind. They were on their way to Campo to have a feast, but it was on death that most of them would dine. Because you see, their menus, they had been changed. But the bandits still got their fill of buckshot from the shotguns of Lumen and Silas Gaskill. You see, there were six bandits in Campo that day, 'cause one was sent on to scout ahead. But when this battle was over, five were dying or already dead. And a neighbor's ranch hand, who had heard the shots and came riding into town fast, only to be mortally wounded by a bandit's six-gun blast. Today, some say in Campo that gunshots can still be heard upon the breeze. Some say that hanging bodies can still be seen twisting in Campo's trees. You see, two of the bandits were lynched by ranchers who came to see that justice was done. Today, this may shock you all, but that is how the West was won.
Howdy! East County Magazine and KNSJ invite you to our Barbecue and Wild West Fest on Saturday, August 10th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the historic Descanso Town Hall in Descanso. Round up your friends and family for this fun-filled event. We'll have a Wild West show featuring the Hole-in-the-Wall Gang and the Gaskell Brothers reenacting scenes from our region's colorful Western past. The Pine Creek Posse Band will provide live music, so grab your partner and bring your dancing shoes, or should we say cowboy boots. Plus, the Descanso Junction will be cooking up a tri-tip barbecue feast. We'll also have prizes and surprises at our Wild West Fest, which is all a benefit to support our wildfire reporting, alerts, and nonprofit community news. Yee-haw! Reservations are going fast, so save your spot now for our August 10th Wild West Fest. Call 619-698-7617 or email editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Today, you can also find more details at www.eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 Descanso, serving San Diego and East County and streaming live worldwide on knsj.org. Over the weekend, more than 1,000 federal, state, and local law enforcement officers conducted Operation Allied Shield, resulting in nearly 400 arrests, including 34 gang members. The operation included parole and probation checks, traffic stops, and serving search and arrest warrants to locate and arrest gang offenders. Command posts were established in Spring Valley, San Diego, and Vista. The actions resulted in 79 drug seizures, including marijuana, cocaine, heroin, crystal methamphetamine, and more. Funding for the operation was provided by a $5.5 million grant from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Reporting for KNSJ and East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. Pine Valley Days are back again. This annual celebration has been happening for 43 years. The location is the Pine Valley County Park on Old Highway 80. On Friday evening, July 26th, the two-day celebration begins with a deep pit barbecue and dancing under the stars to the Honky Tonk Kings. The fun continues all day Saturday, July 27th, starting with a parade at 9 a.m., including festivities all day. These include kids' activities, a country marketplace with over 25 vendors, a chili cook-off, and Music in the Mountains, a festival of live music all day. Visit www.pinevalleydays.com for details on the festival and the performers. A featured activity this week on Destination East County happens on Wednesday, July 24th. Stroll the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College in the balmy summer evenings with your doggie. Wednesdays from 4 to 7 p.m., now through August 31st, bring along a canine friend on a leash for extra fun. The garden is designed for walking, sitting, browsing, and relaxing among the varied species of plant life. You'll learn lots of tips for water conservation in your yard and garden, as well as ideas for garden arrangements of all kinds. Also at Cuyamaca College in El Cajon at the Performing Arts Center, Young Actors Theater presents Les Misérables. Tickets are on sale for performance dates July 25th through 28th and August 1st through 4th. Check our calendar on East County Magazine for showtimes. The last Thursday night of each month at the Regal on La Mesa Boulevard in La Mesa is Best Night of Free Comedy. The show starts at 8:30 p.m. Their headliners have been on Comedy Central, The Improv, Gabriel Iglesias' Stand-Up Revolution, and have toured with other well-known comedians. The comedy show is only once a month, but each Friday night they have karaoke with K.J. Roman at 9:30 p.m. The City of La Mesa presents Movie Nights Under the Stars on Friday, July 26th at La Mesita Park. The family movie Wreck-It Ralph begins at 8 p.m. with pre-show entertainment at 7:30. Also on July 26th, enjoy Friday nights in downtown El Cajon at the Prescott Promenade. The concert features The Next Generation, a modern bluegrass band, this Friday evening. Dining discounts are offered at local restaurants. Camp with the Stars at William Heiss County Park in Julian on Saturday, July 27th at 8 p.m. Join guest speaker Doug McFarland as he takes you for a celestial journey through the heavens with his star program. After the slideshow, take advantage of the multiple telescopes to view the starry skies of San Diego County. This event is open to all ages. If you plan to spend the day at the park, you can enjoy the 10 miles of hiking, equestrian, and nature walking trails, as well as all 7 days of the week. Pets are allowed as long as they are on a leash. Dos Picos Regional Park in Ramona holds activities every Saturday throughout the day. There must be at least 10 people, good weather, and ranger availability, so please check with them at 760-789-2220 before starting out. The planned activities at the amphitheater include a ranger-led walk and talk, junior rangers, snakes and skins, crafts, earth ball game, and a texture scavenger hunt, all at different times during the day. Saturday night hikes are scheduled for the month of July at 8:45 p.m., so this Saturday night is the last one. Also in Ramona on Saturday night, July 27th, view the family movie Brave at Collier Park starting at dusk. The park has barbecues, picnic tables, playgrounds, a tennis court, and a native plant garden. On Sunday, July 29th, connect with nature during a family discovery walk at Mission Trails Regional Park from 3 to 4:30 p.m. meet at the Visitor's Center at Mission Trails Regional Park in San Carlos. All of these activities and more are in our calendar and festivals and events section on www.eastcountymagazine.org. That's all for this week. See you around East County.
You're listening to East County Magazine, the voice of East County. We reflect your interests, the people's interests, not special interests. As a nonprofit, we rely on community support. You can help us provide community news and reflect a rich diversity of voices by donating or becoming a sustaining member at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Janice Moore, host of People Power, profiling people and organizations making a positive difference in our community and our world. This is Janice Smork. I'm talking with Victoria Sinelnikov, who graduated as valedictorian at Cuyameca College. Victoria moved from Ukraine in 2004, where she worked as a nurse, to marry a fellow countryman who had immigrated as a child to the United States. She learned mostly conversational English in adult school. She's an example of the American success story when she moved here from a foreign country and was able to graduate as valedictorian. How hard was it to learn English?
I came to the United States in December of 2004. I studied English in the high school in Ukraine. I could read and write basic English, but I couldn't talk well. It was hard for me to learn American English because in Ukraine I studied British English.
What was the biggest challenge when you first moved here to the U.S.?
I was surprised that people follow rules and laws in the United States. That is totally different from my country.
And how did your parents feel when they found out you were moving to the U.S.?
They were surprised when I told them about my decision. They didn't want to let me go there, but I told them that I want to be together with my fiancé. I left everything behind, my family, friends, and work, as I had to start a fresh new life in the United States.
Why did you decide on Cuyameca College?
Cuyameca College is closer to my home than Grossman College. I visited both and I like the Cuyameca College more. I liked a beautiful landscape of Cuyameca and bigger parking lots.
Okay, that's very nice. She not only came here, but she had to raise two children while attending college. How did your husband support you and how did you manage to juggle school and family?
He's the only one person who financially supports our family, and also he helps me to take care of children while I'm in college. It is hard to juggle my time between both, because school takes priority over everything else, as I want to keep getting 4.0 in all my classes, as I believe will pay off at the end.
And you have two children, correct?
Yes.
And your son's name is?
Kirill.
And Elizabeth is now two?
Yes.
All right. Why did you decide to become a nurse from the start?
I wanted to be a physician from my early childhood because my grandfather was a surgeon orthopedist and my grandmother was a dentist. I decided to become a nurse from the start in the United States because I finished a medical school in Ukraine and earned my medical degree there. My nursing diploma was not recognized in the United States, so I decided to start my education from the beginning.
You also talk about your first biology class in your valedictorian speech and how you were motivated not to give up. So what motivated you?
The future of my family and my will to become a nurse motivated me to not give up.
And you plan to transfer to San Diego State in the fall to continue your career in the medical field. Do you plan to just get your nursing degree there?
I want to receive a bachelor's degree in pediatrics from San Diego State University, and later I want to receive a master's degree in order to become a nurse practitioner.
How long did it take to get your degree at Cuyameca?
I started my education in Cuyameca in the spring of 2007, and I graduated from Cuyameca College only in the spring of 2013. It was a long way for me.
Oh, wow. And you quoted Confucius in your opening speech. Would you mind sharing that quote with East County Magazine?
Yes, I was inspired by Confucius, who said, "It doesn't matter how slowly you go, as long as you do not stop," because his words were all about me.
Thank you for sharing your story with East County Magazine. You can read the story, which will be posted online at www.eastcountymagazine.org in the education section.
Thank you.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I thought this time I would talk about the biggest mistakes that homemakers make. And I think one of the first ones, and I find this when I go to people's houses to do a consultation, is I ask them what their goal is. Frequently, they know. And that's awesome when they tell me, I just don't want to pay this much for water anymore, but I don't want a desert look. Those are two really good clues for me. That tells me, okay, we're going with either native or Mediterranean plants. We're going to mulch everything. We're going to put in drip irrigation. And I know where to go from there. Unfortunately, a lot of people go to the nursery before they know what their real goal is. And if you don't have a clear goal, you're not going to have a good plan for how to achieve that goal. You can't also come up with your goal and then your little sketch and your plan and then go straight to the nursery. It would be great if it was that easy. We would all love it. But you have to do the soil preparation first. You have to address the drainage issues first. And then you also have to know something about plants. At this point, if you don't own a Sunset Western Garden book, you better get one. And you better start checking what you've come up with for a plant list. How you don't do it is you don't go to the nursery and buy everything you see that's pink, that's pretty. That doesn't work. You need to know what these plants want in the way of sun exposure, watering, how big will they grow. I have seen people plant shrubs that are going to become 10 feet tall and 10 feet wide, and they have put 8 of them in a 10 foot by 10 foot square. That doesn't work. So you need to know about the plants. You need to know water. You need to know sun or shade. You need to know what kind of soil they like. If you're planning to have a blueberry farm, you better make adjustments ahead of time for the soil. You need not to think so much about the color of the plants, because that's one of the last considerations. You also need to plan for maintenance down the line. You need to have somebody come in and do a good job of pruning on your trees. You need to put in good mulch so that the plants will not be stressed out by too much heat. You don't want to use unrelated plant materials.
I hate it when I go to somebody's house and they tell me that they're going to hand water desert
landscape on one side of the driveway and a Japanese garden on the other side.
If you have more than one flower bed that's very small,
put in an irrigation system. And my favorite for everything is drip irrigation of some sort. Too many accessories, aka yard art. Be careful. It can start looking very junky very quickly. Basically, if you stand there and look at an area of your yard, you shouldn't see more than one piece of yard art in that field of vision. And then the last thing I would mention, if you're doing a design-it-yourself situation, make sure people can find your front door. You should have a friendly, colorful walkway to the front door so that people don't stand there wondering which way they should go. You can do that by outlining that walkway with bright colored perennials, putting in a few landscape lights, a few, it shouldn't look like a landing strip, and then have a welcome that everybody will enjoy. You too.
Attention motorists. Interstate 15 southbound will be closed this weekend between State Route 56, the Ted Williams Parkway exit, to Rancho Penasquito Boulevard Poway Road exit. The closure Saturday to Monday is due to drainage improvements. Southbound express lanes will be open as a detour and will be available to all drivers free of charge. Motorists who don't use the carpool lanes will be detoured to westbound State Route 56 and then onto surface streets. Northbound lanes on I-15 will not be affected by the closure. Expect long traffic delays. Caltrans spokesman Gustavo DeLarda warns. He adds, the best thing for motorists to do is steer clear of the area completely. Drivers are also asked to watch out for highway workers in the area. This is a missing person bulletin. The San Diego Sheriff's Department asked public help to locate Kenneth Lamb. Lamb is 79 years old and was last seen standing at 2 a.m. on July 20th in his neighbor's yard near his Spring Valley residence.
Mr. Lamb was recently diagnosed with dementia and is taking blood-thinning medication. According to his neighbors and his friends, he's become more and more disoriented over the last week. He's been living in his home for over 30 years. His routine includes church and working in yards in and around the La Mesa area. He's 79 years old, 6 feet tall, and weighs 140 pounds, has balding gray hair with a mustache and stubbles, has an unkempt appearance, and is very thin. His vehicle is also missing from the residence. He drives a gold 1999 Ford Ranger pickup truck with an extra cab. There was a piece of plywood in the bed of the truck, and the license plate is California 6N22819. If you see him, please call 911. You can also call the Lemon Grove Sheriff Station at 619-337-2000. Again, the missing man's name is Kenneth Lamb.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
So we're here at Santee Lakes, and we're at the Spray Ground. This looks like fun, yeah, Miriam?
It does. There's lots of little kids in there splashing around, getting all wet.
And why don't we have one of these for adults?
Good idea, Mike.
Looks like fun.
It does.
Hello, I'm Mike Hancock. We're on the road in East County. We're here with Jonathan Skinner with Santee Lakes. How you doing, Jonathan?
I'm doing good, Mike. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for taking some time out to talk to us today and tell us all about what's happening at Santee Lakes.
We're really excited about our property and what we do here. We're a community asset. We've been out here since over 50 years, offering recreational opportunities for the community. And when I say the community, I'm not just talking Santee. I'm talking about La Mesa and El Cajon and Alpine. They're part of that 750,000 people that we have come here every year.
That's a lot of people coming to Santee Lake. So, Jonathan, can you take us back to the beginning of Santee Lakes and tell us how it all started?
When it was the Santee Water District, there was a challenge that we had. And basically, we do reclaim water. The Water District does reclaim water. But we were shipping it down to San Diego. And we had an opportunity either to maintain that or to find a way to handle the water ourselves. And Ray Stoyer, the general manager at the time, decided to make it a way that we can take care of recycled water here, and the recreation came as an afterthought. We started actually working with the environmental community to get it approved to have reclaimed water used for recreation, so that's really, really exciting.
So it's a green operation, the reclamation of the water?
Yeah, we actually have a very big plant north of us, and it recycles 2 million gallons of water a day.
This is Miriam Raftery, and I understand this has become an international model. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, you know, when you look at reclaimed water, a lot of times they just take it and, you know, use it for irrigation and other sources. What we were able to do is find a way to make it for recreational use. When Ray Stoyer started this project back in the 50s and 60s, he was able to get approval to have limited contact with the water, but also use it for recreation. So if you take a look in our general store where we're just at, you'll see pictures of we had sailboats. So we will be bringing back. Exactly when, I'm not sure, but we will be bringing that back. We have fishing that started back then. We currently stock over 38,000 pounds of fish between trout and catfish a year.
You also added camping.
If you took pictures of our old campsite, it was very primitive. And now we're on, I would say, part of the state-of-the-art of camping. We went from under 100 sites to now over 300 sites. We've also included cabins. Three of them are floating, and seven of them are on shore.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the floating cabins.
It was a labor of love from our previous director, who is now our general manager, Alan Carlisle. He was approached, and the park was approached, from people who didn't have tents. They didn't have trailers, but they wanted to come camping. So through a lot of research and support from the board of directors, we found a way to have cabins, which are basically trailers that are stationary. We have them on Lake 7. It's absolutely beautiful. So three of them are floating cabins. We actually have a dock that goes up to them, and they're floating. And then we have seven land cabins.
So they're anchored.
They're anchored. No, they don't just travel around, which is a very good question, because when people ask to reserve and they say, well, am I going to be floating? You're going to be floating, but you're going to be stationary.
It'd be hard to get a good night's rest.
So you won't get seasick.
Well, we haven't had anybody get seasick yet.
What else is in your dream list there for Santee Lakes for the future?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, Miriam, because right now we're doing a master plan for the park. The last one we had, which was the 21-21 plan, came up with a lot of great opportunities and projects for us, which we completed. But currently what we're looking at is expanding our recreational opportunities. Some of the things that have been talked about is a zip line.
Hey.
We want to do some shore restoration, which is going to increase some of our picnicking opportunities, some retrofits that we have for the back of the park, upgrading things that have been here since, not the beginning, but since the 70s.
They also have various things that you can rent to go see the lake.
Some of the amenities we've had for a couple of years is our pedal boats, which is really, really big. They either have it for two people or five people. And it's primarily right now on Lake 5, which our goal is to also put them on Lake 1, is one of our biggest lakes. One of our newest additions that we got in 2012 are our Surreys and our bikes. Now, if you haven't seen a Surrey, there's a song about it with a Surrey on top. So it's a two-person or four-person bike, and you can actually fit as many as six adults and two kids up front. It's a great way to see the park up front, but it's also great exercise, and you'll be able to see that when you go out on it.
Right. Yeah, that sounds good.
And so we're going to take you on a tour and go pedal around the lake and look at some of the sights.
Okay, so we set off on the Surrey, and here we are at Santee Lake, driving around, and we're going the wrong way.
Not in the lake, though. How do we break it?
Oh, the brake's right here. If you see something bad about to happen,
just yank. Okay.
Yeah, cool. We want to go to the left. Is this the way we're supposed to go? So we're not supposed to go on the sidewalk. This thing really moves. Let me know if you want to drive.
Cool. Here we go.
I don't think we could go uphill anyway, even if we try.
We are on the road in Santee Lake.
We got a wave, too.
Yeah.
I think we're going to park it right here.
Jonathan, tell us about some of the fun activities that you've got planned this summer out at Santee Lakes.
Well, starting on June 21st, we start our movie series, and we call it Movies by the Lake. It's on Lake 5, absolutely beautiful.
Bring your popcorn.
Definitely bring your popcorn. Yeah, it's like a drive-in movie, and we encourage people to bring their picnic baskets and their blankets. We have games for the kids, and we also, at certain ones, we have bands who come and play. There's a special concert that is here for the Rotary, which is Concerts at the Lakes. That one, they have two bands, one called Ramshackle, which play a lot of the newer music, and then they have four lads from Liverpool. And that is a Beatles tribute band.
Jonathan, thank you very much for joining us today. And where can people get more information about Santee Lakes?
Well, they can go to our website, which is www.santeelakes.com, or they can visit us on Facebook and like us on Facebook, or they can call us at 619-596-3141.
We'll be back again next week with another edition of On the Road in East County. Howdy! East County Magazine and KNSJ invite you to our Barbecue and Wild West Fest on Saturday, August 10th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the historic Descanso Town Hall in Descanso. Round up your friends and family for this fun-filled event. We'll have a Wild West show featuring the Hole-in-the-Wall Gang and the Gaskell Brothers reenacting scenes from our region's colorful Western past. The Pine Creek Posse Band will provide live music, so grab your partner and bring your dancing shoes, or should we say cowboy boots. Plus, the Descanso Junction will be cooking up a tri-tip barbecue feast. We'll also have prizes and surprises at our Wild West Fest, which is all a benefit to support our wildfire reporting, alerts, and nonprofit community news. Yee-haw! Reservations are going fast, so save your spot now for our August 10th Wild West Fest. Call 619-698-7617 or email editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Today, you can also find more details at www.eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
You're listening to East County Magazine, the voice of East County. We reflect your interests, the people's interests, not special interests.
As a nonprofit, we rely on community support. You can help us provide community news and reflect a rich diversity of voices by donating or becoming a sustaining member at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Matt Palomary, local award-winning author of fiction and nonfiction. His novel, Land Without Evil, was adapted into a full-length stage and sky show and is the subject of a PBS series, Arts in Context. My guest is also editor-in-chief of Muse Harbor Publishing and longtime teacher at the Southern California Writers Conference. Welcome, Matt. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Land Without Evil is an historical novel about the first contact between shamans and Jesuits in 18th century South America. Can you tell us what inspired this book and your overall interest in shamanism and ancient cultures?
I've always been fascinated with shamanism, and I took an honors course in anthropology at San Diego Mesa College, and I learned about the story of the Land Without Evil, which is about the first contact between the Jesuits and the Indians, but I told it from the Indians' point of view. So it really has the heart of shamanism in it. It's all about shamanistic beliefs and their conflicts with traditional Western culture. And when I read about the story of their migrations, which parallel the story of Exodus in the Bible with Moses,
right,
I was fascinated that nobody had done that story. So I said, this has to be told. And so I got obsessed and I researched it for 2.5 years and I wrote it.
So that marked the beginning of your journey.
That journey, yes, because what I learned in the research with studying shamanism is the indigenous people of South America, which became my specialty. And so I eventually had to go down there and experience things directly. And I've been going down there now for 14 years.
You've also written a memoir, Spirit Matters, which details those journeys to Peru. How did the writing of your journey compare to creating a work of historical fiction?
Well, after studying shamanism and having some experiences with it, I had to go to the jungle and experience it directly, working with shamans, which I did.
Right.
And what happened is that my life started getting weirder than anything I could write about, being a fiction writer, as you are. And so I decided that my story was worth telling because of the things I was experiencing and getting a real perspective on shamanism that few people are lucky enough to get. So I brought it all together and had really amazing experiences. So I wrote Spirit Matters, which won the San Diego Book Award, I think it was in 2008.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That was very gratifying. It's our lives are a story.
So how are these two books related to your latest book, which is neither a memoir nor a novel? Can you tell us about that book and how it fits into the overall trajectory of your writing and editing career?
Yeah, The Infinity Zone is nonfiction, and it's based on Perfect Form and Motion, which is based a lot on the works of Rudolf Steiner, who started the Waldorf schools. And the essence of The Infinity Zone is learning to master energy, which is what shamanism is all about. They call it the power path, because you're learning to master yourself and all the energies around you and connecting with the energies of nature and all of those things. So the concepts of how energy works are the basis of The Infinity Zone. And I worked with Paul Mayberry, who's president of Grail Sports, and they have a device called the 8-Board, which teaches you to perfect the motion of your body. He's a tennis pro. They use it for perfecting tennis strokes. Pitchers use it. Professional sports people use it. Golfers use it. And it's all about perfect form and motion, which is mastering the energies of your body. And that's what shamanism is about, is mastering energy on all levels.
So tennis is connected to shamanism.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The form and the motion of the figure eight, which is why it's called the Infinity Zone, gives you maximum power and efficiency with the least amount of effort. It's the perfect motion of the body.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, our time is up for today, but thanks again for joining us. For more information on Matt Palomary and his work, please visit his website at www.mattpalomary.com. And again, this is Raina Menashe, and you've been listening to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's live radio show.
We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Menashe, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.